morning, I'll call this meeting of the San Luis Obispo County Planning Commission to order and ask for a roll call.
Commissioner Wyatt, Commissioner Christie.
Here.
Commissioner Melsko.
Here.
Commissioner Rappa.
Here.
Chairperson Rose.
Here.
Let it be known that Commissioner Wyatt is absent.
All right. And I'll ask that everybody, one, turn your cell phones off, and all the commissioners, turn your green lights on so you can speak, and ask that we stand for a flag salute.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, so now's the time for public comment, and anybody who would like to address the commission on matters that are not on the agenda. The agenda is available in that wooden box on the left as you go out, as is the staff reports are available next to Mr. Hogue. He's pointing down. If you'd like to look and see what the staff reports say. But moving on to public comment, Eric Greening. And that's the only speaker slip I have for public comment. And we'll obviously take public comment for each item as it's heard.
Good morning. I am Eric Greening. And as you know, you finished your work on the Santa Margarita Ranch on October 9th and sent it off to the Board of Supervisors, who had a 903-page staff report and a 70-page supplement and got started. What I was not able to find in any of that record, and I may have just missed it, although I looked several times, I understand that you went into a closed session on that day relative to a letter from North County Watch, and that when you reported out of closed session, there was some sort of letter from your commission to the board that was supposed to address the issues raised by North County Watch. I would assume that if the board receives a letter from you, it should be part of the public record that's in front of the board and which the public can address. So far, I have been able to find neither the North County Watch letter about your process nor the letter that presumably was going to be written pursuant to closed session. So has something been conveyed to the board? If so, in what form, and why can't it be part of the public record, or did I just miss it? Thank you very much.
Anyone else for public comment? Okay, closing public comment. Responding to it, the letter was to Mr. Jenks. It was not to the board. And I'll paraphrase it here. The Planning Commission reviewed your letter on the above matter and authorized the following response. The Planning Commission took final formal action on the Santa Margarita Ranch Ag Cluster Subdivision on October 9th. On October 15th, the applicant appealed the Planning Commission's action to the board pursuant to provisions of the county code, et cetera, et cetera. The Board of Supervisors were held a de novo appeal hearing on the proposed subdivision. That hearing is currently scheduled for November 4th. You request to cure and correct dated October 20th cannot be addressed by the Planning Commission as, following the decision and the appeal, it no longer has jurisdiction over this application. Therefore, the Planning Commission respectfully declines to take actions requested in your letter.
And I believe, Mr.
In December, you will have your regular first meeting of the month on the second Thursday. That's December 11th. And then we have a special half-day meeting beginning at 1 o'clock in these chambers on December 18th, and that's scheduled to begin at 1 and end at 5. And then in January, you resume your normal second and fourth Thursday schedule.
Okay, thank you.
And I think that's, unless I noticed Ms. Carroll walked in, unless she has anything for staff updates, that concludes this portion of the agenda. I caught her unaware. Talking to the wrong person, and we don't have the right person here, so we can report later.
Okay, then that concludes planning staff update. There's nothing on the consent agenda, and Well, the secretary is reading the first item in the record. I wonder if Mr. Hogue, you could call county council and tell him we need some adult supervision here today.
Item one is a continued hearing to consider a request by John Peel for a conditional use permit and reclamation plan. County file number DRC 2005-00027, District 1. Jeff Oliveira, project manager.
Good morning, Chairman Rose, members of the commission. Jeff Oliveira, environmental specialist. The project before you today is a request by John Peel for a conditional use permit and reclamation plan for a sand and gravel mine on a portion of the Salinas River. Staff is requesting continuance of this item to time set aside on the January 22nd Planning Commission agenda. And that comes as a request from the applicant who is not able to make it today. And they've been informed of the January 22nd date and have agreed to that. Thank you.
Okay, I have no one here to speak to the matter.
I would move continuance of this item to date certain January 2nd, 2009.
I think she said January
22nd. Pardon me.
There you go.
I'm sorry.
I'll second it.
Okay, motion to continue to January 22nd. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed say no. Sounded unanimous to me. Moving on to our second hearing item.
Item two is a hearing to consider a request by Jeff Marston for a conditional use permit variance. County file DRC 2007-00158, District 1. Karen Nall, project manager.
Good morning, Commissioner Rose and other commissioners. Karen Nall with the Planning Division. Today we're here for the Marston conditional use permit and variance. The project is located just north of Walsona Road, between Monterey Road and the freeway, with frontage on Monterey Road. The zoning of the site is the purple shown on the map. It is commercial service.
A technical break here.
We're not. Up there
we're
for
not
a
getting.
Moment.
We're not getting. There you go.
Oof.
Okay.
Is it working?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, if you make it full screen, we'll really be pleased. Oh man, this is good.
Thank you. Back to the zoning, it's a commercial service and doesn't show up great on that map, but the adjoining sites are zoned residential suburban. And then south of the site is the darker gray is industrial zoning. So it's a little mixed use area. And the red bar through the middle is Highway 101. Aerial of the site. Currently, the structures that are shown on there were, I believe, sheds, and they have been removed. Here's a view of the site. The structure that you can see there is not on the site. It's off-site towards the freeway. So the project is an RV and boat storage facility. It includes six carport structures, a caretaker's office, or caretaker's residence with an office. There's a floor plan of the caretaker unit with the attached office. And this is the elevations. Basically, what you'll see is a metal fence that will surround the entire facility. That's 15 feet, 10 inches high. The request today includes a variance from the planning area standards located in the Salinas one foot reduction in the rear. Also, the building setbacks are requested to be modified. More of a major change there. The planning area standard requires a 70-foot front setback, and this project's requesting a 30-foot. 40 feet on the sides is required. The application is requesting 20 foot, and there's a 60 foot required building setback, and this application is requesting 10. Then the last planning area standard being requested to be waived is masonry or stucco fencing, and this, again, application is requesting metal fencing. So a brief discussion about the planning area standards. The intent of the planning area standards for this commercial service area was to maintain a visual corridor along Highway 101. So the setbacks were designed that way with and the landscaping setbacks. This particular property is not located on 101, does not have any frontage on 101. It's located on Monterey Road. And when this planning area standard was put in place, this site was part of a larger site. The intention of that planning area standard, if this site would have been developed as one, that was the intent of the planning area standard, but with it, with just a portion of the site being developed, those setbacks are not necessary. And then this is the only site along that corridor that does not have 101 frontage, so it makes the site unusual. Sorry. Another photo of the site. Back to the, I wanted to show the aerial again, so you get your bearings that the highway is here. This used to be part of one big site, and then this lot was sold off separately, and this is Monterey Road here.
Ms. Knoll, before you leave that screen, are those existing residential uses on all three sides?
Yeah, this particular house is, I would say, boarded up, abandoned. There's been some issues with that house, so it's not a usable residence at this time. This is a inhabited residence, and so are these.
And
as far as this one, I believe it is still a residence. And then this is the old doll museum, which is now, I believe, functioning as a church. This is a slide of the site across the freeway. This is the frontage road over across the freeway, and there's the doll museum. I just wanted to show you the vegetation there that screens the site, and so the site is located back in this area. And with that, staff is recommending adoption of the negative declaration and approval of the conditional use permit and variance. And I'm available for any questions.
And do you have a picture of what the metal fence would look like? And I understand the purpose of the planning area standard was to not have some redwood board fence that gradually deteriorates and looks tacky. So is this, in your opinion, going to meet the permanence the same as a stucco kind of a thing? Or
I would say yes. Instead of a wood fence that would deteriorate with time, the metal fence is more lasting.
Okay. Maybe the applicant can give us some more details when they come up.
A couple questions, Ms. Knoll. The variance for the fence is being requested for the material. Is there a variance needed for the height?
No. This was kind of an unusual circumstance because basically it's part of the facility. The fence is essentially how the buildings start because there are a series of carports, and then the fence will basically secure the whole site.
Okay. When I looked at the list of allowable uses, a storage yard is an allowable use, and that's what this is being classified as. A storage yard, in my mind, is basically a yard, an open use, and there's mm-hmm. discussion of, you need to have crushed material on the ground and those sorts of things. And I didn't really envision a storage yard as having buildings. Have we, yes. Certainly buildings of such, so much site coverage, have we interpreted that allowable use as including the construction of buildings?
Yeah, this
elsewhere?
Is a little bit of an unusual application. Typically, we see many.
C would be this metal
Hopefully all you'll see is the beautiful landscaping.
Right.
Yeah, that was kind of my follow-up question. The plans submitted to us actually show a huge amount of screening, and so the fence will become almost non-existent in a sense. It will certainly exist, but to the eye, you won't see it. That's the last page of these plans.
Would a 15-foot fence be allowable if it were just a fence and it wasn't part of the structure of the project?
Yes, anything higher than 6'6" becomes a structure, so it would need a building permit, and then you need to apply setbacks. That's the difference.
And the setbacks are part of what's being requested as the variance?
Correct.
Okay.
Any other questions? I had one for Mr. Marshall. We seem to have a lot of roof here, obviously. So what's the drainage plan? I realize we haven't come up with a detailed one because that waits. But what, in your opinion, is going to be required in that?
Sure. Chair Rose, Glenn Marshall, County Public Works. You're correct. We will be analyzing the drainage, evaluating the drainage at the time the building permits or the grading permits are submitted to the Building and Planning Department. And we would, in this area, we'd be looking at allowing the Q2 undeveloped flow to continue to pass, and then anything else generated by the site, the impervious area of the site, would have to be retained on site in some sort of surface or subsurface basin.
So how would, using general engineering practices, how would that occur? I know in Napomo, sometimes they have some underground storage basins. And
in this area, we have a lot of clays. So underground basins may not be too conducive. What we're looking at probably would be a surface basin. They can use part of their parking lot if they so choose. This will all be evaluated during the time of building permits. But then they'd be allowed to meter out the discharge of their basin. So it wouldn't actually be a percolation basin because it would probably exceed the 7-day rule that the county has.
What about rainwater capture for irrigation of all that landscaping that's going to be screening the fence?
We would encourage that, certainly. And they could use that as credit for the retention.
Okay, now it's the public hearing, and the applicants, first up, Pamela Giardini. And on her way up here, I would want to disclose that I met with the applicant, one in the St. Rose Church parking lot, as we're moving children from schools, and additionally, I took a tour of the site with Ms. Giardini and the applicant, and they showed me the pictures that we were, well, for real, what I saw, and we discussed the variances at some length.
Good morning, Commissioners, Mr. Chairman, Pamela Giardini, and I am the agent for the applicant. I just want to review a couple key points and make sure that you understand. I think Karen did a really good job of going across the variance and that understanding this parcel was linked to parcels that were adjacent to Highway 101, and that since it was sold off separately, that's why these setbacks we feel are no longer appropriate, that were called out in the planning area standards, and the staff has complied with that or agreed with that. They did an analysis. We were required to do the landscaping to show that it would be appropriately landscaped. In regards to Ms. Christie's question about the fencing, the rooftops of the structures then abut the fencing, so it is an integral part of the fencing on the perimeter. And so because there are open structures for RVs to pull in or boats to pull in from the interior, the rooftop then abuts the exterior fence. We have kept a substantial landscaping screen around, and Karen and I have talked when the final plan comes in, rather than having uniform trees all the way down the side to kind of make it look more natural by grouping it and putting some shrubs in there and stuff, so it gives it a better natural feel to it. Mr. Marsden is a member of the community. He does own Mars Mega Storage. That's within the vicinity from here. He's got a good relationship with the public. They've had no complaints about his existing facility. It's kept really clean and neat. This did go before the San Miguel Advisory Board. Karen did state in the report that they did support it. I do have official copies of their minutes if you want to have those for your records. I could hand those in. They did support it. The community came out in support of it too, and I think we have quite a few members here today too that will speak to that Other than that, I think I'm just here for questions if you have questions, and if there's anything else I need to answer for you that Karen didn't cover.
So could you discuss what the metal siding, a.k.a. fencing, would look like as I peek through the extensive landscaping? What would I see?
You'll see fencing, that the metal fencing that's part of the backside of the structure, that's going to be like a tan commercial to the west along Highway 101. So it is kind of a mixed-use neighborhood, but still in conformance with what's going on and what the county saw as their planning department as a commercial node type area.
Okay. Questions for the applicant?
So, Ms. Giardini, just to be, because I was looking at your pictures and trying to follow your conversation, this is, this shows a fairly linear layout for the
right.
for the trees, but you're going to make it a little bit more
broken.
And I haven't seen any language about the use of native drought-tolerant species.
That's standard in the land use ordinance requirements, so we'll have to meet that.
Okay. So hopefully once these trees are established, they won't be needing any water at all. But in the meantime, when they're getting established, that critical first several years, do you have any thoughts about what Mr. Marshall and I had briefly touched on earlier about doing rainwater catchment for irrigation off the roofs of the structures?
I can leave that to the civil engineer who's here today who could speak on that. I know that the drainage basin will not be underground. It will be above ground on site, I believe, is John McCarthy's the civil engineer on that. And whether he can capture rainwater off the rooftops will be, you'll have to ask him.
But there will be, there will be a well and septic associated with the project because you've got the caretaker's residence on site. Any idea what the GPM of the well?
I don't know off the top of my head. It's going to have to meet county code to be able to go forward as that. I mean, you only need 5 gallons per minute for a residence anyway. But
right.
he's going to have to meet fire safety standards. He's going to have enough water supply on site for CAL FIRE, and that's probably the bigger issue.
Yeah, I'm wondering because if an 800 square foot house would not normally have landscaping of this extent, and so again, I'm just trying to see if there's some way we can not use the well water for the irrigation purposes. But that sounds like something maybe your engineer might have some thoughts on.
He may have, and it's the residence is subservient to the primary use, which is the commercial use. So the property is to be developed commercial first with the resident being a caretaker's unit for it.
I don't think the commercial use is going to really use much, if any, water.
Correct.
Correct. So the well, for all intents and purposes, is for the house.
Correct.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, next speaker, Jeff Marsden, and then I took Mr. McCarthy out of order because I think we got some questions for the engineer.
My name is Jeff Marsden. I'm the applicant. I own Mars Mega Storage across the street. We tried to be a good, clean, quiet neighbor. I think I have the neighborhood support here. We have the support of the San Miguel Advisory Council. We've done everything that we were asked of as far as the Advisory Council, and we put up extensive landscaping around the property. To answer your question, the well across the street is 90 gallons a minute, so it's a big... It's a big well, the property is zoned for this type of project. It's been zoned that way for over 27 years. It is off the old highway US 101, what was been commercial for long time. There's still actually old cabins, hotels, and things up the road a little bit. So, we are on the approved zoning list, and we'd like to just, we're a family business, and we're going to stay there a long time and keep the place clean and nice, and so I would appreciate your support.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Now some questions for Mr. McCarthy, and be followed by Scott Spong.
Good morning. John McCarthy with McCarthy Engineering. I'm the engineer for the project. And some of the questions that were asked already, I just wanted to address quickly. Jeff did say at the beginning of the project, because of the runoff that we have here, that he wanted it to go into the landscape areas. So we have really tried hard to get the runoff to split and go into the landscape areas on both sides of the project. We're also looking at the ability to catch some of that runoff and then store it for landscaping. We haven't developed all of that, but we have talked a little bit with the county as far as their requirements for runoff and things like that. So yes, he is interested in that, and it looks like we're making good progress in that direction. I am familiar also with Mr. Marsden's first project, which is kind of catty-corner from this. It's a clean project. If you've been out there, it's quiet, and he really maintains
it. Okay. Scott Spall.
Thanks.
I've known Jeff for a number of years, and he runs a very clean business. He's very adaptive to getting things done. If you guys say you want trees, he's willing to put trees in, and he's done a good job in the past with planters, and I think he'll do a good job on this project too. And I think it's a very good project for the area. Instead of having something else going in, it's quiet and it's good for the neighbors, and the neighbors seem to support it, so I support it too.
Thank you. Bob Franklin, followed by Andy Hernandez.
I'm Bob Franklin. I've been a resident of the North County for over 20 years, and I have a business in the North County. I came down to support this project. I think it's a clean project, uses very little water, very little power, has very little impact on the environment. I think it's necessary in the North County. It promotes tourism. We're going to have individuals be able to bring up their RVs or their boats and stage them where they're actually going to use them. And I think that it adds to the tax base. I think our tax base is shrinking. We need essential services. And this is a good first step in helping our tax base. Thank you.
Thank you. Andy Hernandez, followed by Sheila S. Sarnas.
Good morning. I'm Andy Hernandez. My real name is Manuel Hernandez. I reside at 6476, which, if I don't know if you have the aerial map, I can show you exactly where I live.
Well, you could just give us a general idea.
Okay, well, his Jeff Marsden's project, the first one he did, the storage area, is just to the south of my property. The new one that he's doing, and my residence is there, is directly across the street from my home, between my home, between Monterey Road and Highway 101. I've only known Jeff for a couple years since he's done the first project, and everything he's done with that, I'm excited that he's doing another one, because he keeps the other one really clean, he does what he says, and he's been a great neighbor. You know, he's a great guy to work with.
Okay. Thank you. Sheila, followed by Rick Butler.
Yes, my name is Sheila Elizarres, and I'm a fellow business owner in the North County. I also reside in the North County. And I've known Jeff for approximately 4 years, and I also am currently leasing one of the building's storage units inside of his building, so I've frequented there, and I've been adapted to the way he runs his business, and it's very clean, and I've also, as a business owner, noticed how much effort he's put into the extra monies that he put into making the facility quiet with quiet garage door openers, and I just think he's a definite businessman that wants to be welcomed in the area and the community. So,
thank you. Rick Butler, followed by Mark Pippo.
Hi, my name is Rick Butler. I'm here to support Jeff Marston's project. I personally live in a gated community with CCNRs, and we're not allowed to have a boat or an RV where anybody can see it. My first year in the community, I actually got in trouble and got a letter from our, wasn't a real positive situation, but Jeff's project, his existing project, is extremely clean. It actually enhances the area. I've been able to refer a couple of my customers that live down south to him, and I've gotten thanks and praise on the job that he's done with his existing project. And I'm here to support it 100% so I can continue to refer people out of the area for a good, safe, clean place to park their RVs.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Mark Pippo, followed by Mike Lura.
Good morning. My name is Mark Pippo. I am a resident of the North County, and I do support this project. I've known Jeff for a number of years, and he runs a very clean operation, and I think it'd benefit the community and help dress up the area. Thank you.
Thank you. Mike, followed by Dave Pipple.
Hi, I'm Mike Luna. I'm actually a resident. I live just up the street from the project, so I'm familiar with the old project. My wife and I also own and operate a mini storage that's south of this project. If you've been out to the project, you've the one in place, you'll see that it's a huge upgrade from what's been on there. It is zoned for this type of use, and the alternatives for what he could put on there, you know, gas station or something else, this will be, as far as traffic goes, quite an upgrade for what could be put there. So I do support this project as well.
Thank you. Dave, followed by Aaron Carlishan.
Morning. My name's Dave Pipo. I'm a North County resident and a business owner. I've known Jeff for a number of years, and I'm very familiar with his existing product. And it's very clean, quiet. It looks nice in the area. You would never know it's there coming down the freeway. And I support his project 100%, and I know it'll be just as clean as his first one. Thank you.
Thank you. Aaron, and that's the last speaker slip I have.
My name's Aaron Kardashian, and I'm representing a business, which is Buckeye Enterprises, which was before your board about 2 years ago, and you allowed us truck parking, which is just across or west of, through the advisory committee and through your board, we've been able to step things up. We've got nothing but, you know, thank yous, and, you know, it's looking great for our piece of property. People come down the highway and say everything looks orderly and everything looks great. And in that same note, you can say the exact same thing about Mr. Marsden's piece of property, that he existing piece. You drive down there, it's clean, it's orderly, and it's nice. As far as the water runoff, when we finished our project, we actually had about an acre of setback, and that was for putting our landscaping all the way around. We had the civil engineer come in and do the watershed and see what it was and what the runoff was. It actually reduced the runoff by 13%. So as far as the runoff getting outside of, you know, we had added 90 redwood trees in the dotted area, like she was saying, so it doesn't look like a fortress. You know, it looks, you know, more conducive to the area. And the water ended up going where it was supposed to. The nice part about that was is that we ended up irrigating less. And it is very easy to capture your water. The general on our job now has set it up so that we can capture some extra water and use it for irrigation. So it's really not an issue. I can't believe that he would not want to do it. I'm sure he will. It's simple, and I would be more than happy to, you know, give him our plan and what we've done, and we're pretty neighborly in that area. So thank you for your time.
Thank you. Anyone else to address the commission on this matter? Seeing, come on up, sir. And then after you're done, fill out one of the little speaker slips and give it to the secretary there. After you're done.
My name is Tim Gillis. I'm a local real estate appraiser. We have inadvertently been involved with the original project since my partner did the appraisal for the original project. And the reason I'm here to support it, because I also live in a neighborhood where there are CCNRs that don't allow parking on the street. Being in the North County, there are obviously a lot of boats and a lot of driveways, which make a lot of neighbors not very happy. This, I believe, is a reasonably priced alternative to get those boats and RVs out of the driveway, off the street, and into a facility where the price is reasonable enough to store. And I know that would make a lot of neighbors happy. I hear that complaint, having been in this appraising property in this county for 19 years. And that is not often a subject, but that is brought up all the time by neighbors regarding boats and RVs parked on the street where they could be somewhere else.
Okay, thank you. Now is anyone else? Ms. Giardini, any brief concluding remarks?
If you
could get one of these little speaker slips, sir, from that back and give it to the secretary there with your name on it.
Just to address the drainage issue, because of the amount of setbacks that we have, it's almost an acre in size. And so Mr. McCarthy has designed it so that the basins are then supplying water to the landscaping. So I came up with a quick condition that hopefully Ms. Christie will approve. I something along this line, and maybe Karen and I could work together. The applicant will work closely with the Public Works Department during the drainage plan review to capture runoff to be used for landscaping as much as possible. So that kind of ensures that then that would be done. You can include that in as a condition of your approval.
That would be perhaps 7D, which is the grading, drainage, sediment, erosion control. It's got... That's the one that says you're working with Public Works to figure out drainage.
Chair Rose, Glenn Marshall, Public Works. I also drafted up something quickly, either to put, we can either, on page 2-10 of your staff report, condition 7C, we can either add it to that or create a 7D. And my language is very similar to Pam's, and it states, to the maximum extent possible, the applicant shall incorporate rainwater catchment improvements into their project design for landscape irrigation purposes.
We'll go with yours.
Oh. Would you like that as seven added to 7C or 7D?
Wherever makes sense, we'll let Ms. Null decide that, okay, where it's going to go.
Let's make a D.
Make a D, as in Delta. Okay, anything else?
No, but I think just a closing remark in that, I think you've noticed the amount of neighbors that have come out that are familiar with his existing facility, and I think that speaks very highly of Mr. Marsden's business that he runs now. And so realizing what kind of business he's going to be expanding upon and bringing to the area.
We're kind of wondering if this was an adjourned meeting of the San Miguel Chamber. Maybe not, but no.
Thank you.
Okay. Back to us. So we got a new 7D. Did you get all that? I guess Glenn could...
Hopefully Glenn's going to read it again for me.
Read it again.
I can read it again or I can email it to you.
Would you do it both?
I'll read it. Okay, into the record. It's new on page 2-42, new condition of approval 7D.
Wait a minute, 242?
2-10.
2-10, excuse me. New condition 7D. To the maximum extent possible, the applicant shall incorporate rainwater catchment improvements into their project design for landscape irrigation purposes.
Okay. Any other questions? Discussions? Motions?
I would move approval of the negative declaration and approval of the conditional use permit DRC 2007-00158 based on the findings listed in Exhibit A and the conditions listed in Exhibit B as amended.
Second.
Okay, I guess Mr. Christie was beat you to it.
Yep.
So, as is with the new 7 Delta.
Mm-hmm.
Roll call.
Commissioner Rapa?
Yes.
Commissioner Christie?
Yes.
Commissioner Melskow?
Yes.
Chairperson Rose?
Yes. Okay, moving on. Could we go to hearing item number 3 and introduce that, please?
Item 3 is a hearing to consider a request by Ron Holland for a reconsideration of the conditions of approval for Tract 2507, County File Number SUB 2007-00174, District 3, Stephanie Fuse, Project Manager.
Members of the Commission, Stephanie Fuse, County Planning. This project is a reconsideration of Tract 2507 to add a 1 1/4 acre building envelope to an existing 20-acre parcel. It's lot 4 of Tract 2507. The project is located on Ormandy Road, south of Price Canyon Road, south of the city of San Luis Obispo. The project is in the rural lands land use category. And a little history of the tract. This is showing the entire tract, 2507. It was a 6-lot tract. It was approved in 2004 and recorded in 2005. There were lots of constraints on this property. There's Pismocalarchia, which is a federally listed endangered plant. There's oak woodlands, steep slopes, and it was also part of oil field operations previously. The result was that conservation easements were established to protect the botanical resources. So the conservation easements are shown in purple. And then building envelopes were also established
to provide additional protection of resources, and they're shown in kind of the teal color. And this is lot 4, which is the lot that's under consideration right now. Lot 4 in particular was used for a sand mine operation as well previously. So that added to the constraints of the site along with steep slopes and oak woodlands. This is an aerial view of the lot. This is the detention basin wetland on the property, and then the proposed building envelope is right in this area. This is another aerial view of the site. This shows the approximate location of the building envelope.
And is that...
Oh, sorry.
Going back, is that little circle approximate size of it also?
Sort of, yeah. I couldn't draw the bell shape real well, so I went with an oval.
But I see some rather extensive vegetation up our screen a little bit, kind of where the A in approximate is. I presume we're not going there?
No, this is actually within the conservation easement area. And this shows the recorded lot. This is the Pismo Clarkia conservation easement area. This is the proposed building envelope with an additional 50-foot buffer. This is the detention basin wetland, and this is the existing approximately 2-acre building envelope. And here's some site photos. This is the wetland, and then this area behind the wetland is where the building envelope would be. This is kind of a closer view of the building envelope area. Another view of one of the oak trees on the building envelope.
What is that white pipe there?
You know, I don't know. I'm not sure.
Like irrigation of some kind.
Maybe something that drains to the wetland areas right down.
And while you're there, it looks, you said that was a constructed wetland, so it gets drainage from?
It was constructed when the sand mine operations were there because they had a lot of erosion problems because it was a sand mine. And when they were trying to close the mine, they had to revegetate the hillside because the slope where the mine was just eroding away. So I believe that's the reason why the basin was put there initially.
And then what's that brown structure there?
I don't know what that is. Perhaps the applicant can discuss that. This is a view of the building envelope looking towards the Clarkia habitat area. And this is on the building envelope looking across the wetland to the existing building envelope, and this is where the sand mine operation was previously. And with that, staff is recommending approval of the reconsideration based on the findings in Exhibit A and conditions in Exhibit B, and that the commission adopt the negative declaration in accordance with CEQA. And I'm available for questions.
Questions?
I just have a question. There's a 50-foot buffer that's shown around the newly proposed building envelope. I was curious why it wasn't included within the envelope.
Staff felt that a 50-foot buffer would better protect the wetland area and the Clarkia habitat area.
Well, I have no problem with that. I was just curious why the envelope didn't include the buffer area, so that it becomes part of it, and it's very clear that that's what that buffer is intended to serve.
Well, generally when we have building envelopes, it's assumed that the whole area within the envelope will be disturbed.
Okay,
so
and would be
sure.
Applicable for development.
Right.
Okay.
Any other questions?
No, that was it.
Everyone, so now we have two building envelopes.
Right.
And what?
In the rural lands category, there our land use ordinance allows 2 primary dwellings, and so that was the reason for the request in general.
Okay.
The reason given in the staff report is because there seems to be some stability issues and compaction issues with the existing building envelope. But And that's the reason that's stated for creating this envelope. But this request doesn't seek to extinguish the previous envelope. It seeks to establish an additional envelope. So if it's stability issues that are driving this request, wouldn't it be appropriate to say, okay, we're not going to build it over here, over there, we're going to build it over here. And as part of, if we take this action, extinguish the previous building envelope and replace it with this one.
That was something that we did discuss when we were reviewing the project. The stability issues obviously are something that geologically could be worked out through compaction and getting the right amount of compaction and that sort of thing.
If that were the case, then they wouldn't need this building envelope.
Well, I think the comment was it's cost prohibitive or something. Can you put the map, I don't mean to interrupt, Sarah, but can you put the map back up that shows the entire track?
There we go. Right, so the compaction was a factor that we did talk about, and basically the applicant was I don't get the impression that the applicant is the person that will ultimately be developing this property, so he was also wanting to leave room for the ability to be able to build on either
or both
because most of the other parcels do have two envelopes.
So basically what the applicant is requesting is the ability to build two homes on this parcel instead of one home on this parcel.
Right, which is allowed by ordinance.
Which is allowed by ordinance, but it wasn't allowed by the creation of the original map, as we see Lot 2 only has one building envelope as well. And as you stated at the beginning, this is a highly constrained site for all of those reasons, including the wetland on this site, which isn't located on the others. Okay, that's the extent of my questions. Okay.
Can I just follow up? Because what was the original intention of only putting one building site on Lot 4?
Unfortunately, I wish I was the planner on this, but my understanding was that at that time, the two-acre envelope appeared to be large enough to have the two residences, if they wanted to build the two residences, any accessory structures, and then it became a question of, okay, is this soil compacted? How can we build on this? And it became clear to the applicant, apparently, that would be a very costly thing to do. And that's really the only understanding I have.
And the size of the proposed new building envelope is
1 1/4 acres.
And did staff discuss a 2-acre site so that it could be, so that we would again remove the development potential in an area that, you know, either could be cost a whole lot more or just not be in the appropriate place? I've lost you.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
I kind of gathered from the staff report that the reason was really economics as to why, because we have the ability to stabilize soil. I mean, that's not, you know, out of the question. And I guess what I'm asking, if the purpose in making that lot with the building envelope being 2 acres, why wasn't that part of the discussion in the relocation of that building envelope? I really thought it was a relocation. I'm pleased that Commissioner...
It isn't a relocation. When I was discussing it with the Environmental Coordinator's Office, it was part of the discussion that I had with them that, okay, instead of having this 2-acre one, why don't we just have this 1-acre one and remove the existing one entirely? But it was felt that existing building envelope could potentially, if a buyer wanted to build in the existing envelope and wanted to go through the cost of going through the geotechnical reports, that they should have that option to be able to do that.
Well,
Mr. Chair, may I ask Stephanie a question to clarify this point? If the idea is to take the new building site area and make it somewhat bigger to allow for two houses there and retire the other one, is there physically enough room? Because this area is between the wetland and the Clarkia habitat. So that's the question in my mind with, I think, the train of thought that Commissioner Rappa was taking. So if you could offer an opinion on that.
Yeah, I would say no, just based on here, this slopes straight down into the wetland. I wouldn't want grading and that sort of thing going on here. And then it's kind of flat, and then again it drops off into the Clarkia habitat, and I wouldn't want drainage going that way either. So that this kind of relatively flat area was seen as kind of the area that would be best suited.
And that's about an acre and a quarter.
About an acre and a quarter.
You know, I have the copy of the botanical survey that was done in July of 2004, and you know, most of the time these things are just, you know, not that useful. But in this case, I think it is a little bit instructive about what was in the Planning Commission's mind in 2004 when they approved the original subdivision, and that was when the proposal was to subdivide the 135-acre property. And it says the property is divided into three lots, each of which has been proposed for division into two lots, which would allow for one or two home sites. So at the outset, the assumption was not that every single lot would have two home sites. That's number one. Then it says the home sites would be located in the more level portions of the project site, positioned in grassland communities. So the idea was, we have this environmentally constrained sites. Some of these parcels will be appropriate for two home sites. Some of them will be appropriate for one home site. But they're sort of going to be parcel dependent, and those sites are going to be located in the open, less environmentally constrained areas. Now, I'm reading a lot in between the lines here, but that is what is stated as the intent of the original subdivision. So I'm just throwing that out there.
Yeah,
and
I was curious, was that the situation for lot number two?
I wish I knew the background.
Mr. Hogue, you've been around a while.
Yeah.
Do you happen to remember?
But my attention was distracted, so I'm going to have to ask you to repeat the question.
Can you put the map back up? That map would have been really helpful had it been included in our staff report.
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Lot number two
only shows one building site.
My recollection, and it's a hazy one, is that that's all they asked for, that there wasn't, to the best of my knowledge, there wasn't some other overriding constraint.
Okay,
I'm gonna take a slightly different tack. Oh, Gene's got something.
I had a quick question. If two residences were allowed, is there a restriction on the distance that they may be separated, or is there any?
Not in rural lands.
Not in rural
They're
lands.
Not restricted by size or proximity to each other.
So they could be put anywhere on the parcel.
Right.
Okay.
I got a question. What about ag structures? Pole barn, if they were maybe horse people, maybe they want to put a pole barn. Would I be correct in assuming they got to put it in the building envelope?
Yes.
Okay. And would I be correct in assuming if they put some kind of horse barn thing, they wouldn't have the compaction issues that they would have for residents?
Probably not.
So that might be a reason to maintain that one in case they wanted to have their pole barn to put horses or something there.
Well, and I'd also like to read, I mean, what staff is characterizing as a detention basin was characterized in the botanical survey as a freshwater marsh. And they're talking about, they've got a whole list of species that are growing there, and wildlife that was observed on the, you know, on the marsh at the time that the original subdivision was proposed. So, you know, I'm not saying that it couldn't be useful as a building site, but I'm saying I think that probably has something to do with why a building site wasn't originally proposed there, because it's not just a runoff detention basin, it's a freshwater marsh with sensitive species that are observed and utilizing it. So
I'm missing your point there. But neither the old or the new building site are in the marsh, right?
Well, it's right up next to it. I mean, it's sandwiched between the marsh and the protected habitat. And from an ecological standpoint, you know, there's connectivity between those two. It's not like, I mean, there's ecologically there's connectivity between the two. So,
are you kind of asking the question? Is the currently approved development footprint a better location than what is being proposed?
What's starting to sort of materialize in my view of this request is that really what it is a request for greater density on parcel four, for greater, you know, ultimately more homes to be built on parcel four. You could have a very large home in that existing envelope, which isn't being proposed to go away, and you could have another, you know, fairly substantial home in what's being proposed as the new building envelope, which is being proposed to be put in an ecologically sensitive area that was probably not considered for a building parcel at the time of the original application because it's got a wetland on one side and endangered species on the other. If it turns out now that the existing envelope is not suitable for a habitable structure because of the soil problems, then if we're going to consider approving the new building envelope, I'm at this point inclined to say we should only do that if we're removing the previous envelope, because otherwise all we're ending up with is greater density on something that was acknowledged at the original subdivision stage to be an environmentally sensitive and constrained site.
Okay, we're kind of deep into the discussion here.
We are.
Why don't we hear from the public here first? Not that I have any speaker slips, but the applicant's agent here. Okay, so much for that.
Well, you tried.
I thought maybe the gentleman in the back was perhaps a neighbor. Okay.
Well, first of all, I have to say that
I just got to ask one more time. Anyone here from the public wishes to address the commission on this matter? Seeing no one come forward, I'll close the public hearing, bring it back to the commission. Now we'll start discussing.
Well, I have to say, first of all, I was a little surprised that this is within District 3. I could have thought it was in District 4, but that's okay.
Redistricting.
I guess so. A little bit more of that gerrymandering that went on. Yeah, I kind of have a difficult time with this because...
Why?
Well, because... And I don't want to sound flippant or anything about... In today's approach to, you know, building standards and you can compact just about anything and you can make it work. And I guess I really have to question if the proposed site is a better location or is it more of an economical location. And I guess I also would have been easier for me to make a decision had I had a little more background information. And the applicant isn't here to give us any comments. I'm not sure if we just consider denying this request or if we suggest a continuance if staff feels that there's an opportunity to work with the applicant on something that's more appropriate. I have a difficult time with the proposed development footprint.
And I just, whenever we're asked to come back and sort of second guess or reconsider an action of a previous planning commission, I always tread carefully because I hope that in the future other planning commissions will afford us the same level of consideration. And at the time that the original subdivision was approved, I think that planning commission had probably significantly more information in front of it at the time. It probably had the applicant here, for starters, and it probably also had members of the public on both sides of the issue. And I think everybody at that point would have had the botanical survey report that talked more in depth about the resources on the site. But, you know, they made their decision and required their mitigations, and you know, trade-offs were considered, and that action was finalized. And I'm just uncomfortable coming in. It feels a little bit cavalier to me for us to come in 4 years later and say, oh, yeah, sure, give them another building site. And again, if there was a compelling reason why new information had come to light that made the existing building site infeasible, then absolutely it would be appropriate for us to look at another, a different building site. But to just come in after the fact and say, oh, yeah, sure, you can have another acre and something to be, I mean, I just don't think that that really honors the previous, more comprehensive, fully informed decision that was made when this property was originally subdivided in 2004. So I would be, unless somebody else can come up with some compelling information to change my mind, I would favor a denial of this request at this time.
Okay. The way I see it, we got we got four possibilities you can do. We can approve it as is, we can just deny it as is, or we could approve it and eliminate the existing building envelope, or we could approve it and restrict that building envelope to, say, ag uses or, you know, non-residential uses.
We could also continue the item and ask staff to work with the applicant.
We could continue that, too.
Okay, or he would if it were a motion.
I would move that we continue this item.
Off calendar.
I don't think we want to do that.
You should continue to a date certain.
I'm just waiting for a date.
And I can give you two choices. There's an hour on December 11th, and then there's more than an hour on January 8th.
Either one, December 11th.
I have two other items on December 11th, so that would be preferable to.
And being timely is always good.
Okay, I move we continue this item to December 11th and request staff work with the applicant on an appropriate building site for Lot 4.
Second.
Okay, speaking to the motion, I hope that we come back, that, you know, staff has heard what we say and have in her bag of tricks a findings for denial if we go that direction, or if you hear from the applicant that he's got some issues.
Some compelling reason why the existing envelope doesn't work is what I heard.
Right.
Well, I
maybe
guess
it does work. I mean, don't manufacture it. I mean.
Yeah. All right. Just so you've got that in front of you there. Okay. Move to continue to, December 11th?
Right.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed say no. It was unanimous.
Mr. Chairman, staff may want to distribute the botanical report that Commissioner Christie referred to, so that everybody has that available when you come back on December 11th.
It was prepared by the Morrow Group, dated July of 2004, and just for the record, the reason that I have it is because I've worked out an arrangement with staff that I always want to see the biological reports, and the other commissioners didn't want to be weighted with the paper, and I don't blame them.
just like I always get the RF report.
Absolutely.
It would be extremely helpful to me if we could, if you could include or at least send electronically the original staff report, which went through the details. Thanks.
We don't have any sound right now.
Oh, how lucky we are.
Well, time for a break. Yeah, there's no sound.
Okay, well, you've taken your action, so.
Taken our action. We have voted unanimously to continue December 11th, and now it's time for a brief intermission here.
Yep.
Okay, we're ready. Okay, I'll call this meeting of the San Luis Obispo County Planning Commission to order. And could we introduce the last hearing item, please?
Item 4 is a hearing to consider an appeal by Ruth Sullivan of the Director of Planning and Buildings Determination, County File Number DTM 2008-00003, District 2, John Vassell, Project Manager.
Commissioner Rappa?
Mr. Chairman, I apologize, but I have to leave for the day. I have an appointment at 11, so I leave this last item to the three of you.
Okay, let the record show that Commissioner Rappa has left. Up to you, John.
Mr. Chairman, members of the Commission, John Vassell, County Planning Staff. This is an appeal of a vacation rental ordinance. The appellant is contending that the ordinance, she disagrees with the that the ordinance is valid. She disagrees with that her use of her property as a vacation rental violates Section 23.08.165 of the Vacation Rental Ordinance, and feels that, like I said, the ordinance is not valid or enforceable. Our ordinance 23.08.165 has a section C in it talking about location, that within Cambrian Cayucas, which is where this project is, that all in the residential land use category, we can't issue a vacation rental permit if there's another vacation rental within 200 feet of the existing, or the one that's proposed to be a vacation rental. Now, in her case, I'll show you how this works. Here's an example of what we look at when we look at the distance. So we measure 200 feet within the same block is how the ordinance reads. So we're looking at, you know, 200 feet on this corner lot, for example. We would go to 18th Street, then up to the northeast 200 feet. Something across the street would not be in the same block, and therefore there could be one within 200 feet, but it would be across, for example, across 18th Street. So it has to be in the same block, but anything within 200 feet of an existing vacation rental would not be eligible. In her case, her property in yellow is the Sullivan property in question. The vacation rental that makes hers not eligible is right next door to her property, so it's adjacent to the property. And that's shown on the assessor's map here. The vacation rental is in red, and the Sullivan property is in yellow. So we felt that we could not issue her a permit for a vacation rental license for her location because it would violate the ordinance. Now, the validity of the ordinance is the next issue. This ordinance was adopted by both the Planning Commission and Board of Supervisors and certified by the Coastal Commission, and our interpretation is that makes the ordinance a valid ordinance, and that it's a valid ordinance, basically, we can enforce it. Her other contention, Coastal Act Section 302-302-22, regarding visitor-serving uses, our feeling is that this section is actually focused on on commercial recreational areas and not residential areas. This is in a residential area. It's not a visitor-serving area under the area plans. And even in that sense, if it was a visitor-serving area, the fact that the ordinance has already been adopted by the Coastal Commission and they felt that it was compatible with this section of the Coastal Act would mean that our ordinance is still valid in that sense. She also had an issue with consistency on vacation rental tenancy. Talking about that's the allowance for you can't have occupancy of more than one family or a person per 7 calendar days, and that's in both the definition in framework and in the Title 23. It does say the same thing in terms of it shall not exceed one individual tenancy per 7 calendar days. So we feel those are consistent in that sense. And so for the reasons that stated in the findings, we feel that her appeal should be denied. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer.
Questions for staff? Seeing none, this is a public hearing. The applicant, the applicant's agent's here.
Good morning, my name is Shauna Sullivan, and I'm here representing my mother, Ruth B. Sullivan. My mom owns a wonderful house in Cayucas that sits vacant, as she can't rent it because of this ordinance that the county has that prohibits use of private homes as vacation rentals if there's another one located within 200 feet. I have a video, hopefully that will come up.
Oh, it takes a while to get it all going here.
It's a terrible waste of a resource that could and should be used by the public and to further the goals of the Coastal Act. The Coastal Act provides that low-cost visitor-serving opportunities should be enjoyed, and this home should be enjoyed, but it sits vacant, as do so many others in Cayucas in this stretch. Not only should we be making our resources more accessible for visitor-serving uses, our community gains from the bed tax that's generated when a home is used as a vacation home. We should be promoting tourism by making available to families more low-cost access to the beach. Instead, as I said, this home sits vacant. It's in a community of 61 homes. Out of the 61 homes, there's 10 owner-occupied homes. That's it. And those 10 owner-occupied homes owners are dictating to the non-resident neighbors what they can do with their homes, who they can rent them to, how long they can rent them, and when they can use their homes. The area is so underutilized, all to protect 10 homeowners. It looks like a ghost town. If we could get this video up, you'll see this ghost town. This was last Saturday this video was taken. And there's nobody there. It looks like it's a gated community. It looks like it's just a ghost town. And it's really such a waste of our resource not to have this available to the public. And that's what the Coastal Act's about. It's about providing access to the public, not just San Luis residents, but the public. And we all.
I'm talking to the.
Oh.
They may need some help here.
It's coming up.
Okay. I think you've got it. There's no sound to this, and it's only 1 minute. But I just wanted to show you. This is the house that my mom owns. And next door is a vacation home, as we stated. And we've never had any problem with the vacation people next door. It's just not an issue. The house on the other side, I've never seen anyone there. It just sits empty all the time. And it does make sense to have two vacation homes in a row. It doesn't make any sense to preclude a 200-foot radius around each home.
I think you got to push play there, don't you?
It didn't seem to want to play. We tried that.
I played this just before I came.
Okay.
As you can see, there's nobody there. So this is not an area, except maybe on the 4th of July, when it is a busy, busy area, but there's just, it's just a waste of a resource, all these empty homes, and nobody using them, aside from the economics of it. I wanted to put up, after this, which is rather quick, a copy of the Coastal Ordinance Amendments. There's an amendment that endorses the policy set forth in 30213 to provide recreational opportunities for all of the people and to amend the LCP to encourage and protect lower-cost visitor and recreational services and facilities. If you can have the access to a home on the beach with bedrooms to it and steps to the beach, it's so much better for a family than renting a hotel room, and it's certainly going to be more economical. Oceanfront land, this is in the Public Resources Code 30221. Oceanfront land suitable for recreational use shall be protected for recreational use and development unless present and foreseeable future demand for public or commercial recreational activities that could be accommodated on the property is already adequately provided for in the area. This furthers that goal under the Coastal Act. My mother did not apply for a minor use permit as the letter from the county and our inquiries with the county led us to believe that it would be a waste of the almost $2,800 application fee, as not one has ever been approved to date. To prohibit any economic use solely based on an arbitrary 200-foot radius makes no sense. As I said, there's never been any problem with the neighbors, and my mother pays the second highest property tax bill in the whole Studio Drive area, but she can't even rent this place to recover the tax bill, the property tax bill that she pays, let alone the encumbrance. I understand that your board and maybe the Board of Supervisors is going to revisit this ordinance to address standards for the community. It is, if the issue is working out workable standards to address parking and noise and parties, that's fine. That's totally doable. And it should be addressed because you do want to maintain compatibility in the neighborhoods. But to have an arbitrary elimination based upon the location of the property is unfair, unconstitutional, and it certainly is not productive or at all in compliance with the Coastal Act, which is to encourage accessible visitor-serving uses of our coastal resources. Thanks.
Hey, a question for you here. You gave us some correspondence here, and you included a 69-page document, which was from the California Coastal Commission, prepared June 27th for their July 10th, 2008 hearing. And I read it, but what did you want me to get out of it? I missed it, you know. Why did you include all that? It looked like it had other stuff that was related to the community. But
it was highlighted. Maybe you didn't get a highlighted version of it. But there were portions of it, and that already went to the Board of Supervisors, and the fine has been dropped and the action dismissed against my mother and the realtor. But what I wanted you to get out of that, there's some areas in there. I actually quoted this one part is from there about how visitor-serving accommodations are encouraged.
Right. I got that argument, okay. But I thought maybe it was so specific that and correct me if I'm wrong, this is kind of like a staff report.
That's correct.
And
for the LCP amendment.
Right. And I just couldn't. I missed it, whatever
well,
I was supposed to
get. Well, you didn't read all those pages, that's true.
I did read all them pages, but
no,
exciting reading, but.
No, I didn't mean you didn't read them. I mean, you didn't need all those pages to read.
Okay.
Ms. Sullivan, I've got a question. It sounds like the crux of your argument is that this vacation rental has served as low-cost visitors serving accommodations. What did the house rent for?
That's not actually what I said. I said it could accommodate low-cost
housing. Well, but
housing.
It's been on the, you have had tenants, you've had renters in there.
Actually, I'm not willing to address that issue right now. We've already had to go through a whole enforcement process. And so it's not rented. It is not rented. It hasn't been rented, and it's very seldom been rented in the past.
Well, the reason that obviously you don't need to answer if you don't choose to answer, but typically I can tell you the way that low-cost visitor-serving uses have been interpreted under the Coastal Act are truly low-cost accommodations like youth hostels and campgrounds. And in some cases, the commission has even restricted, for instance, condo conversions to require that a certain number of the units be made available for a certain median price. And so it's sort of the way I see it is there's two different, oh, I'm so sorry. There's sort of two different tracks here. One is whether or not the LCP is being correctly interpreted and applied. But your argument, more specifically, seems like whether or not that LCP is consistent with Coastal Act policies that are protecting low-cost visitors serving accommodations and public access. And so I'm just trying to determine whether or not this truly was a low-cost visitor serving facility as that term is typically interpreted by the Coastal Commission.
Well, I would hope that low-cost visitor serving doesn't mean you have to be in a campsite to qualify for something that's going to cost less than a hotel room or two hotel rooms for a family. And I can assure you the rental on this house would be less than a couple hotel rooms for a family, and certainly more accommodating because it's, you're right on the beach, you have your own kitchen, you've got bedrooms, and it makes a lot more sense and it's going to cost less. So if you're looking at it from an affordability for a family, I would, as again, I would hope that you're not going to have low-cost housing, only qualifying if it's a campsite or a hostel.
It should be available
to everyone. This home should be available to everyone. And it's a shame that it just sits vacant, as do so many of those other homes. It's a waste. It's a waste of resource. And that's what the Coastal Act is out there to generate, protection of this resource and availability and accessibility. Thanks.
Okay, any other questions? Mrs. Sullivan, did you wish to speak?
I'd like to say a couple things.
Well, come on up to the microphone and give your name for the record.
My name is Ruth B. Sullivan, probably better known as Debbie Sullivan. I've lived on York Mountain for over 46 years, and I've worked on many law changes. I'm past president of Republican Women, Farm Bureau Women, Los Niños Women, and was Bert Talcott's representative, legislative representative for this area a long time ago. I go to a lot of advisory board meetings and have been just really active in the county for a long, long time. I even stopped San Francisco from being able to put a garbage dump on the Chinese cemetery in 1950s. I couldn't even believe that one. That was my first opportunity to make my voice heard, and it was heard. And I didn't live near the Chinese cemetery, by the way. I worked on Proposition 13 and water laws for the county, and this ordinance in Cayucas is one of the worst evidences of iniquity for all taxpayers I've ever experienced. People owning property every 200 feet can rent their property, but no one else between is allowed to do so. Why this law exists is beyond my comprehension. I look down Studio Drive and there's no one there except during the summertime, such as the 4th of July, when a lot of people are in residence. Since I live closer to the area than most owners, I'm able to see all the vacant houses because of this law. I usually walk a great deal when I'm in residence there, and I find the vacancies depressing, therefore going back over the mountain where I feel a bit more secure, on York Mountain. I've slept there 8 times in all the times I've lived there because I don't feel that there is accommodations in case I need help. I've been an involved person for many, many years. I have many friends and acquaintances I'd like to be able to let use this property. Through the Youth Arts Center and the Boys and Girls Club, I've donated a store in San Miguel and give reduced rent for 2 more stores in San Miguel, and all of the money, and all of us donate our time to work in those thrift stores. All the money from those stores goes to the Youth Arts Center in Paso Robles and the Boys and Girls Club in Paso Robles. I'm youth-oriented. I would like to be able to use this house for youth to be able to use it. It's a shame to block that whole area off with kids not being able to go down and use that beach. I walk on that beach and there's nobody there but me. I just don't see the vibrancy in Cayucas that I see in the North County. It's almost depressing to go out to lunch and be the only person in the restaurant and while I'm dining. It's my fervent hope that Cayucas will take another look at this ordinance and decide to be a welcoming community rather than what it has become. For it to be able to make housing available for people to use and enjoy the ocean would be a real plus for the area. It's my wish to see the people of Cayucas able to share their area, which is so very nice, with people from other areas. These people come here, spend money, and leave. You don't even have to educate their kids. They provide income for their work, they spend money, and they go away, hopefully with good thoughts of their vacation. If you continue to lock them out, it is your loss, as well as theirs. I live in the vibrancy of the North County, where people come from all over, and they enjoy and plan on returning. I go out for lunch at one of the restaurants in Cayucas, and I'm the only person there, as I said before. I know this is a no-win situation. I'd like to see this law changed. I would also say I have 5 daughters, 5 son-in-laws, 2 ex-son-in-laws, 8 grandchildren, a brother and sister-in-law, nieces and nephews, 2 brothers-in-laws and families, and many friends that will be using my home, so don't bother calling the county on me anymore. They're all relatives, and unless Cayucas is now into breaking up families, don't waste my time. I will continue to pay my exorbitant tax, property tax of $24,203.04 until the property is sold, hopefully soon. And I thank you for your time.
Thank you much. Lance Carney, followed by David Goldhammer. Lance could take one podium. Maybe David could take the other and be ready to... If anyone else wants to speak, if you'd be so kind as to put in a speaker slip. Go ahead, Lance. David, you'll be ready.
Good morning. My name is Lance Carney. I live at 79 Gracia Avenue in Cayucas with my wife and 2 small children. Gracia Avenue is one of the several finger streets off of Studio Drive. Our neighborhood consists of more than just 61 homes. There are 117 beachfront homes in our neighborhood, of which approximately 33 are full-time residents. In addition, there are 35 homes that don't have a Studio Drive address, of which the majority of are occupied by full-time residents. Our home is 1/10 of a mile from Mrs. Sullivan's house. We are separated by 16 houses. There are 5 houses on Gracia, of which are 2 are full-time residents. And we have 1 licensed vacation rental on our street, and we are also subjected to unlicensed vacation rentals behind us and 1 of the homes on our street. I have read the appeal by Mrs. Sullivan and the staff report. I agree with the staff recommendation to deny the appeal. Studio Drive is a true neighborhood. We have several families whose children go to school with my girls. The school bus stops along Studio Drive in the morning and in the evening, and we ride our bikes up and down Studio Drive. My kids play with other kids who live on Studio. They play on the beach daily. I grew up in this community. My wife and I are not rich. We paid top dollar for our home, and just like millions of other people who have made sacrifices to live where they live, we purchased our home with the sole intention of raising our children in a nice neighborhood. Just because we live at the beach does not mean that we lose our right to have a normal neighborhood. We are already subjected to far too many vacation rentals. We are already forced to pick up their trash and cover their smoldering fires, which they leave behind almost daily. We are already forced to deal with their loud and often drunken behavior all too often. We are already forced to deal with the numerous cars that come into the neighborhood with insufficient parking. When the locals have complained about the ugly behavior of the tourists, we've been told that's what you get for living at the beach. I understand from Mrs. Sullivan's letters that she purchased her home with the intention of renting it out to cover her expenses. It is unfortunate that she did not research where the other licensed vacation rentals are in proximity to her home before purchasing it. However, simply because her property taxes are high does not mean that she should be exempt from following the rules. Our neighborhood is not a recreational facility. Mrs. Sullivan's desire to rent her property does not take priority over my family's right to live peacefully in the neighborhood. The existing rules are in place to protect our community. The rules need to be enforced, not weakened. We do not need more vacation rentals, we need less. We do not need exemptions, we need enforcement of the existing laws to ensure that those of us who have only one home in which to live, we can live and raise our children in peace with our neighbors. Thank you.
Thank you very much. David Goldhammer, followed by Sylvia Loretti.
Good morning. My name is David Goldhammer. I live at 3250 Studio Drive, which is 2 houses south of the Sullivan property. And I would like to add a couple things before I begin my remarks, my prepared remarks. One is that there was an ad for this property that appeared on Craigslist in the summer. I believe it was in July or August. And I believe it listed the rental of this property at $2,000 per week. For me, that does not qualify as low income. In the letter that Mrs. Sullivan's daughter wrote to the commission, she characterized, and in the video, she characterized our neighborhood as a ghost town, as a gated community, as inhabited by the ultra-rich. And I can tell you that I'm not ultra-rich. I'm not even rich, according to at least the Obama definition. My neighbors, many of them are retired. They're on fixed incomes. And the only people, in my opinion, who are rich are the people who can afford to buy these homes that come on the market, such as Mrs. Sullivan's. I believe Mrs. Sullivan paid in the order of $2 billion for that house. The people who had it before Mrs. Sullivan were longtime owner-occupiers. They died. Mrs. Sullivan bought the property and used it as a vacation rental, even though she knew the house immediately to the north was also a vacation rental. So if you look at the distribution of houses in my immediate vicinity, starting from the house north of Mrs. Sullivan's, you have vacation rental, owner-occupied, the one that was described as nobody there, my house, then a long-term rental next to me, then two owner-occupied houses where people live there full-time, and then two more houses that are used as vacation rentals. So for those nine homes, four are currently being used as vacation rentals during the summer. Take a video in November, the situation looks much different than it is in July or August or June when these summertime rentals are active. My opinion is that Mrs. Sullivan's property was occupied by renters almost every week. Characterizing it as almost never occupied is totally inaccurate. As we know, vacation renters treat property and treat neighbors differently than owner-occupied neighbors treat those. Noise, trash, cars, parking. In the 10 years that I've lived there, none of my neighbors, none of my owner-occupied neighbors have ever trashed the beach. They've never had these illegal fires, but the vacation renters have them consistently. And I have some photos that I can give you. Just one instance at the Sullivan property that occurred this summer where there was a big party, went on all night long, they threw their beer bottles and cans in the fire, and it took me at least an hour to try to clean up that broken glass in front of my house. So I would request you do not grant the waiver, do not turn this area into a commercial development of all or a lot of rental houses. I sincerely hope that that does not happen. Thank you.
Thank you. Sylvia Loretti, followed by Nancy Townsend.
Good morning. My name is Sylvia Loretti Goldhammer, and I live on 3250 Studio Drive. I moved here from Germany in 2001 when I got married to David Goldhammer. I love this country, and especially the beautiful central coast of California. As a former flight attendant, I provided hospitality and safety to several hundred people a day, and I always enjoyed meeting people. Also here on the Central Coast, I have been fortunate to meet nice people in the near and far neighborhood. In 2006, I was glad to meet the new neighbor, Mrs. Sullivan. Mrs. Sullivan did not spend a lot of time at her house, but when she did, we usually had a chat. Soon after she purchased the house, she asked me about her immediate neighbor to the north who has a vacation rental permit, if he actually lived there full time, since she would not get a permit herself. She told me that her taxes were extremely high and that she wanted to rent the house as a vacation rental to come up with that amount. Soon after, even without a permit, she started renting the house out. The house was frequently occupied, especially in summertime. Now I would like to comment on the accusation that the lawyer for Mrs. Sullivan makes against me. She writes, "The only complaint that we believe exists is from Sylvia Goldhammer, who makes her living photographing kelp on the beach and obviously has a commercial interest in that seeing the materials that keep her commercial enterprise operating to with kelp disturbed or impacted by the public use of the beach. When I read this, I felt insulted and ridiculed. I do not mind the public use of a beach at all. In fact, I enjoy photographing people surfing and enjoying the beach, and I like taking photos of people bringing their children, dogs, and horses to the beach. Since I then give those photos to these people for absolutely free, I would not exactly call it an enterprise. Moreover, I've talked with a lot of people in the Studio Drive neighborhood, and most of the people who actually live there have had problems with the vacation renters. I'm not the only one. An example of a problem from people at the Sullivan House is the fires on the beach, which are illegal. We mostly built them very close to the bluff so that the smoke would directly get into our house. As if we did not have enough smoke from the wildfires this year, we got the beach fire smoke night after night. One time there was a group that had celebrated a wedding and made noise for music and screaming on the beach until around midnight for several days. So I just kept the windows closed and turned our TV loud so I would not be disturbed and respected the wedding occasion. There were three continuous nights of celebration with fires and lots of noise. After the third night, however, I asked them to at least put out the fire that was still smoking heavily at 11 a.m. in the morning. I had directly given my complaint to these renters. The reason why I think that no exception should be made is the fact that other people might then also ask for an exception, even though they are not supposed to rent according to the regulations. Weekly rentals is a commercial business, and I think that an excessive number of vacation rentals will ruin the neighborhood where I live in. And believe me, if this area was zoned commercially, I would have plenty of ideas to use this by opening a beach bar, a gallery, a craft lab, take photos of people enjoying the beach, and offering them for sale. However, I think that would upset the neighbors very much. Also, I want to mention that on the south part of Studio Drive, there are at least 30
Ms. Goldhammer, could you conclude your...
Yes. Okay, I thank you for your time.
Well, one concluding sentence or something?
Well, you know, with the houses, that was already mentioned that there are more houses occupied than was told. So thank you
okay.
for your time.
Thank you. Nancy Townsend, and that's the last speaker slip I have.
My name is Nancy Townsend. I live with my partner, Doug Glass, at 3262 Studio Drive, which is just to the south of Dave and Sylvia. We would like to address the issue regarding the proposed change from residential to vacation rental status for the home at 3234 Studio Drive, Cayucas. We live three doors south of said home in a full-time, year-round rental and are glad not to have a vacation rental right next door. We are a working-class working couple just making ends meet, hardly the ultra-rich as implied in the online letter presented by the owner of the house in question. We have to go to work every day. We hope you will consider our thoughts presented in this letter about the subject. We are against the alteration to the existing zoning ordinances that would allow for more vacation rentals along Studio Drive for the following reasons. The house in question sits above a very small cove that already has vacation rentals above it. When these houses are occupied, which happens frequently, the impact on the cove and surrounding beach is significant. Illegal fire pits are often dug and used in the sand, and rarely are they cleaned up in the morning. This task is done by the full-time owners of the house next door to us, Dave and Sylvia. We have witnessed them having to put on gloves to pick up trash, including broken bottles left by vacationers. Additionally, loud music is often played into the night, along with the typical alcohol-induced noise and rowdiness resulting from partying. Children of vacationers are often under-supervised. We have seen vacationing children as young as five climbing the steep, rocky point that Dave and Sylvia's house sits upon, while their parents ignored them on the beach below. It's not only dangerous, but it erodes the fragile plant life growing on it. We have woken up in the morning to see adults standing on Dave and Sylvia's property and looking into our windows. We have witnessed public urination on the base of this point. Presumably, it's too hard for them to walk back up the steps to the rental house, and this has also happened at the base of our house. We have had vacationers using our beach chairs placed on the sand at the base of our steps, as if they were for the use of anyone on the beach. Vacation rentals are unmonitored. How many people actually show up, no one really knows. We have counted 19 people on one small deck of a beach rental on Studio Drive. I'm sure that the rental agency was not aware of those numbers, nor the owner of the house. This beach is not a resort or state park where there are controls in place to monitor people's behavior. At a state beach, there are rangers to enforce quiet hours, etc. This stretch of Studio Drive is not a ghost town for the elite, as stated in the online letter. The public access and the beaches are continuously used every day by the local population of Cayucas and the surrounding areas. Surfers, families, runners, beachcombers, and a very large amount of dog walkers use this beach, even now as we approach winter. When we decided to move from Paso Robles to Cayucas earlier this year, we looked for many months to find a full-time rental in a quiet section of the community. Having full-time residents on both sides of our house, we never considered the crowds that could result from vacation rentals.
Ms. Townsend, you have a brief concluding remarks, and you can give that copy of that letter to the secretary, and it'll be in the record.
We just feel that Cayucas is a special place to live. The Chamber of Commerce touts it as being one of the last old-time beach California towns, and we, along with, I think, most of the full-time residents, don't want it to go the way of the Southern California beach towns with massive crowds and everything that goes with it.
Thank you. You just hand that letter to the secretary, and she'll put it in record. Anyone else speak to the commission on this matter? Seeing none, I'll bring it back to the applicant's agent for some brief concluding remarks.
Some of these comments bring home the reason why you may want to have some more standards that address noise and parking and parties. This is the first I've heard of any parties or anything else that occurred, and I'm not even sure they're talking about this house as opposed to the one next door. But I think it is within the purview to set some rules and regulations on parking and parties and noise and have some kind of joint group that you can report things to, because this certainly was never reported to us that there was any problem at all. And so maybe that needs to be addressed, but that doesn't mean prohibit vacation homes. Those issues can be addressed and they can be dealt with. But that doesn't mean all vacation homes are used as party homes. And that's where I think the purview of this board should be in monitoring or setting up a system that will have a regulation of standards. But for us to hear for the first time that there's some issue at a forum like this, at this point, there's something wrong with the system.
Thank you.
And, I'll just leave it at that. Thank you.
Okay. That concludes the public hearing. Back to the commission for discussion, action. I had a question about vacation rentals for the one that does have a permit. Am I correct in assuming you have a protocol where there has to be a phone that the neighbors can call if there are issues with noise and late-night partying, that sort of thing?
Yes, that's correct. There are standards in the ordinance that talk about having a contact person. The neighbors get notified of the contact person, so if there's a problem, they can call the contact person, whether it's a management company or the owner of the property, depending on if they have a management company. So there is a procedure, and we have forms that they fill out when they do get a license.
Okay. Now, we also heard there were four vacation rentals in the... And the gentleman went down the street. I'm gathering you have the one permitted one, and I guess the others are like unpermitted, or?
Well, there's actually quite a few. When the 200-foot limitation was put in, I think it was in 2004, in that change, there'd already been a lot of vacation rental permits issued in Cayucas that, you know, before that was put in, so it didn't meet that requirement. So there are quite a few. And I don't know what the number is, but there are quite a few that are closer than 200 feet, but anything new coming in since 2004 has to meet that 200-foot limit.
Would I be correct in assuming that those, should we call them grandfathered ones, still have to meet the phone number requirement and that sort of thing?
That's correct.
And once every, you know, one group every 7 days?
That's correct.
And the parking, et cetera, that sort of thing. And would I also be correct in assuming that someone could donate use of the home? I mean, they could own a home and they could, you know, tell me I could come and stay there for the weekend as long as they didn't charge me money. Would that be correct?
That's correct. We don't regulate families and things like that, only if it's operated as a business.
Okay. Further questions?
I wanted to ask about the number that is given just to the next neighbor. It's not given beyond that, the number that they call.
The 200, the number, there's a noticing of, the noticing requirement when you get a permit is 300 feet around the vacation rental. So the the neighbors within 300 feet are noticed, okay, and then the phone number is given to them as the contact person.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Okay. Ms. Christie?
Yeah, I just maybe like to kind of focus the commission's discussion here. The complaints that we've heard are not unlike complaints that we've heard probably throughout all of our tenures here about some of the problems associated with vacation rentals. You know, on the other side of that question is individuals, you know, desires to get some income out of their residences, and we're sort of in the middle of balancing those two realities. But I think what's before us today, this is not a referendum on vacation rentals or tourists or beach parties. This is simply a question about whether or not the planning director has appropriately applied the standards for this application. And obviously the applicant has some concerns and disagreements about how the LCP is worded and whether or not it's consistent with the Coastal Act. But it really ultimately is up to the Coastal Commission to decide how the Coastal Act is interpreted locally through LCPs. And since our LCP is certified, it's sort of like that question has been asked and answered already. Would that be a fair statement, Mr. McNulty?
Yes, I'm Tim McNulty with the County Council's office. And as was pointed out, the provisions that are at issue here today were certified by the California Coastal Commission, and I believe the period for bringing a facial challenge to those provisions has passed as well. So at this point, it wouldn't be possible to challenge their adoption.
Right. So I think probably the only, I mean, I hate to sound, like not responsive to the concerns of the applicant, but at this point, I think the only real option is to maybe, you know, look at trying to amend the Coastal Act if you feel that the Coastal Act is unduly prohibiting people from providing these sorts of activities. But it's not up to us today to say, oh, this provision of our LCP is inconsistent with the Coastal Act, because that truly is not within our purview. I think it's pretty clear and straightforward that you have to be 200 feet away from an existing vacation rental if you want to establish a new vacation rental in the coastal zone of Cayucas and Cambria. And it's pretty clear that this residence is not 200 feet away from the nearest vacation rental, and I think there's really only one way to interpret that standard, and the planning director has done it appropriately. Would staff concur?
Well, that's their staff report.
Yes, I would concur, Commissioner Christie.
Okay, so is there any
further discussion?
I'm prepared to make a motion.
I guess you're ready for a motion.
Then I move that the commission deny the appeal based on the findings of Exhibit A.
Second.
And uphold the planning director's determination.
Second.
Okay, speaking to the motion, quite often I don't agree with our rules, but our rules are our rules. And you could, I think the applicant has made a fair case. Well, maybe this isn't the best interpretation of the Coastal Act. But as Mr. McNulty pointed out, the Coastal Commission has reviewed that, and they have decided that their proposed ordinances are in agreement with the Coastal Act, and so, they've spoken. And I understood from staff there's a procedure or something going on now to amend the vacation rental ordinances.
Yes, Commissioner Rose, as you recall, that the last hearing we had on a vacation rental issue, your commission directed us to prepare a letter for your signature regarding potential, a reevaluation of some of the parts of the coastal, of the vacation rental ordinance. We're also going to the Board of Supervisors in February with a status report on the current ordinance and how it's working and how the standards are working. And at that time, the board may direct us to do a change to the ordinance.
That sounds like an ideal time for members of the public to step forward and say that there's this hole in the act or whatever they perceive as the needs to be changed and make that case.
Correct. That'll be kind of open session on the vacation rental ordinance at that time. So.
And that'll be February?
February 3rd is the date I have right now.
But Mr. Bissell, just to clarify, the letter that we requested staff to draft for us to send to the board was was not to just look at the vacation rental ordinance, but to potentially expand the existing protections for Cayucas and Cambria to other communities in the coastal zone that have been seeking similar protection, such as Los Osos and Avila. Was that, am I remembering that correctly?
That's correct. I apologize for that.
Yeah, we weren't saying, oh, our ordinance is a problem because there aren't enough vacation rentals.
Right, right.
But
right.
The February Board of Supervisors hearing is the appropriate venue to propose any changes you think.
Right, that'll be a time when anybody can, you know, make any comment regarding the ordinance that they feel is appropriate, you know, as far as how it's working.
Thank you for that.
And with that, roll call.
Commissioner Christie?
Yes.
Commissioner Melskow?
Yes.
Chairperson Rose?
Yes. Okay, that concludes our agenda for today. What should we do with the materials we received?
Take them into the record.
Second.
Sound like a motion from Commissioner Christie with a second by Commissioner Melskow. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Those opposed say no. Another unanimous decision.
Gee. Well, it's all right.